The lynchings of black Americans across the South are getting new attention. They're the subject of a new memorial in Alabama. And the Justice Department has reopened the investigation into the 1955 lynching of teenager Emmett Till. But most racially motivated killings in that era technically weren't lynchings. Jay Price recounts one of those cases that took place in Durham.
A notorious part of the Jim Crow era in the South was that black passengers had to ride in the back of buses.
Big sign when you got on there said, colored seat from rear to front, white seat from front to rear.
State Representative Mickey Mashaw was a teenager in Durham back then.
As long as you were riding Fayetteville Street and Pettigrew Street, there wasn't a problem. But when you crossed the tracks, if you had a bus full of black folks, they got up and gave their seats to white folks. And they accepted it. They accepted it.
Durham locals may have accepted it, but when World War II brought thousands of black soldiers to nearby Camp Butner, they often didn't. So many of them challenged the law on Durham buses that drivers complained it had become nearly impossible to enforce. Historian Tim Tyson says black soldiers from the North hadn't dealt with the daily humiliation of Jim Crow laws, and they were unfamiliar with the code that black Southerners were raised under.
Don't look people in the eye too much, you know, eyes down. Act happy, feign gratitude, humor is good. You want a light encounter. You don't want any heavy encounter, you're going to lose something.
Using submissive body language, a deferential tone, picking your words carefully, things that Private Booker T. Spicely, who was from Philadelphia, did not do after he boarded a Durham bus in 1944. He sat in the front. Then two white soldiers got on. The driver, Herman Lee Council, told Spicely, who was black, to move to the rear.
As they're coming onto the bus, Spicely says, this man, gesturing to the driver, this man says, I have to go to the back of the bus. But aren't I wearing the same uniform that you're wearing? Aren't I as good to stop a bullet as you are? Why should I have to go to the back of the bus?
Spicely did move to the back, but kept complaining. He mocked Council for being unfit to serve in the military.
Those were fighting words. But he must have sensed that he had crossed a line with the bus driver. So when Spicely got to his stop, he got off and he went out the rear door of the bus. But before he did so, across the crowd there in that theater of the bus, he said, if I've said anything that offend you, sir, I apologize.
It was too late for that, though. As Spicely exited the back door, Council pulled a .38 caliber pistol from under his seat.
Council went out the front door quickly, down the side of the bus, and shot Spicely in the heart.
The bullet punched through the soldier's dog tag, and he doubled over. Council stepped back, fired again, and Spicely fell to the sidewalk. Council climbed back into the bus and then drove off to finish his route. Military police officers took Spicely to a nearby hospital, which refused to treat him because he was black. He died just after reaching another hospital that would treat him. Later, Council surrendered to police and was charged with murder.
The Durham conservative black leadership went to the white power structure, got assurances that there would be justice, and their message to the lower orders in the black community was, just calm down, we've got this. We're going to get justice this time. Just let us handle this.
That assurance helped tamp down the spirit of anger and protest in Durham's black community. Mashaw says Durham had been largely insulated from the kind of racial vigilantism that was common in other parts of the South.
Yeah, we had to walk around on eggshells, but we didn't tiptoe on eggshells.
But at Council's trial, the bus driver testified that he had fired in self-defense, that Spicely had put his hand in his pocket as if he had a weapon. The all-white, all-male jury deliberated just 28 minutes before acquitting him, a verdict that Tyson says doesn't hold up to logic.
When you get off of a bus to go shoot somebody, obviously that person is not running at you threatening your life.
The Civil Rights and Restorative Justice Project at Northeastern University investigates and documents such forgotten killings from 1930 to about 1955. The project's director is Margaret Burnham. She says such killings of soldiers on buses wasn't unique.
This is a pretty classic case. There are about eight or nine other cases that look pretty much like it.
Among other places, bus drivers also shot soldiers in Texas, Alabama, and Louisiana. But the victims, including Spicely, aren't named on the new lynching memorial. That's because they weren't attacked by mobs, so technically they weren't lynched. Tyson says, though, that the same terrible underpinnings were at work.
I would call it an after-the-fact lynching, because a black man violates some a white man's sense of what the racial mores are supposed to be, and the white man kills the black man, and, you know, might be arrested and might go to trial. But the community expressed its values by letting him off.
Burnham says there were many, many more of these kinds of killings than lynchings, which is why her group is trying to document as many as possible before witnesses and family members are all gone. As Burnham talked about Spicely's case, she cited a pivotal moment for the civil rights movement.
His protest was small. It was quiet. But if we can call Rosa Parks a heroine, and we do, we have a stamp honoring her life and deeds, then certainly Booker Spicely was as well a hero.
A hero who had been dead 11 years before the nation was finally ready for the change that Parks helped trigger when she refused to give a white man her seat. Jay Price, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.